for it. With Nagy, you at least have, well, we were successful in doing this. Well, now you're not being successful. So, and now it's getting close to those two things being even, that you had your 12 wins last year, and it's possible you could end up with 12 losses this year. So it makes it difficult to continue to just believe because of belief's sake. And with Boylan last night, watching the way that he let his team disintegrate, and maybe the timeouts don't help, and he's right about guys not making free throws. Maybe none of it helps, but it was better than the alternative.
Do your job.
Call the timeout. Do your job. Reinsert the starters. You let this happen while LeBron James and Anthony Davis were sitting on the bench. And you know what bugs the hell out of me about this, the way that this game went last night, was my issue was Anthony Davis is having a bad night, right? It's a bad night.
Yes. You were begging to be beaten. You were up 19. That was one of those games of a veteran star-laden team that came into town a couple of days too early and had just one of those little United Center performances.
But a bad night for Anthony Davis is still 15-7. A bad night for Lauri Markkanen is 7 points. And it keeps happening. Yeah. Like, you've got players like that. When you're talking about trying to extrapolate what that guy can be on your floor, and we've now seen him not be on the floor in some games at the end of games, and even last night, he gets, what, one shot in the last few minutes of the game, and it's a bad shot that he took. He can't have those nights where if it's not working, where you have less rebounds than Dwight Howard does, who played 7 less minutes than you did.
You know, the Bulls are already a historically bad rebounding team to this point in the season. I believe in the modern era of basketball, only one NBA team since stats have been kept has been this underwater in rebounding margin.
And the offensive rebounds, particularly in the fourth quarter of the game, the second chance points in the fourth quarter for the Lakers, is what doomed the Bulls at the end of it. That they were still, like, even though the rebound margin wasn't terrible last night, in the fourth quarter when it mattered most, guys weren't getting boards. And they were also being silly with the ball. And I don't know what Lauri Markkanen does on defense. And I'm screaming at my TV to get him off the floor at the end of the game because he's costing you. You've got Zach LaVine still not knowing what to do on screen roll, and because of it, he freezes. He doesn't do anything. It's not even that he's running into a wall trying as hard as he can. It's he gets screened and then goes, well, wait, what am I supposed to do? Too late. The guy's by you now, and you're stuck at the top of the key because you don't know what you're doing. And if I hear John Paxson or Gar Foreman or even Jim Boylan talk about the youth of this team, it's easy to do that. It's really easy to go, well, they have the second youngest roster. Sure, by age, because you kept drafting guys who were teenagers. But now let's talk about their actual experience in the NBA. Let's talk about how many years Lauri Markkanen has played in the actual NBA. Zach LaVine has been here for 6 seasons in the NBA, and he still freezes on screen roll. That's not youth. That's a player that either doesn't want to apply or is not capable of applying coaching to what he does on the floor.
Or isn't getting it. Or isn't getting the coaching that he needs, isn't getting the proper conduit still for that knowledge.
Feels like if you know that, and if you're in practice with the guy each and every day, and sometimes twice, you call a timeout to remind him what to do.
Remind him of what your rules are.
You've got options, you know? I mean, this is, I think you're right in that how they have assessed talent and seen, I think, a lot of it come up a little bit short of their wildest dreams once they kind of, you know, ran into Lauri Markkanen in a nice little track. It is incumbent on Jim Boylan to know what that guy's capable of, then use the things he has at his disposal, you know, in-game timeouts, stuff like that, the dry erase board, things like that, to remind you
all he does
of
is
your
stand
rules
there
and responsibilities.
He clap like a seal. And that's, clapping is not coaching.
Coach.
It can't be both. You know, you can't do both of those things.
I have a real issue, and you know, for the most part, I walk around as a positive person, and I get the idea of trying to manifest things through positive thinking. I get that. But there's a fallacy that has now become accepted when coaches speak about the concept of positivity, which makes them think that they have already reached what it is they need to reach.
Positivity is earned.
You're damn right, Dan. And I think that we have a lot of coaches, and the two in particular that bother me are Boylan and Nagy, who will just stand behind that. Is that, well, we're positive. Fine. It's fine that that's your approach. But if that means, there, and I hate to go all religious, faith without works is dead faith. And until you actually put in the works to have people just to be justified in their faith, I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear how you have a bunch of good guys in your locker room. Of course, we assume that. I don't want to hear how hard the guys are working. Clearly, they're working hard. They're professional athletes. That is not the standard. That is the minimum. That's the minimum of what we're talking about. And these coaches hold that up as the example of, well, see, our place is different. Our locker room is different. Our room is different because guys, they are really invested and they work hard. Congratulations. That's the entry fee to get to this level of sports. It is not the end result.
Well, they got the punch clock. It tells them how hard they're working.
Ridiculous.
How many times they pay that entry fee.
Yeah, their time cards show. So look how hard he's working. He punched in.
You're listening to WSCR and HD Chicago, WBMX HD2 Chicago, Sports Radio 670, The Score, a radio.com sports station. Gentlemen, thank you. You guys had a great show today. I was enjoying a lot of stuff. And there's actually a couple things I want to bring back from the show.
Did you get my aliens metaphor?
Yeah,
extended.
Good God!
Anytime you guys can talk aliens, I'm good with that too. And I'm thinking that might be part of our December January programming around here. If things don't get better in this piece. Thanks, boys. That's Dan and Connor. Listen to them 9 a.m. to noon every day. The top of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Join the Chicago Wolves in honoring veterans and active duty military during Military Appreciation Weekend games on Saturday night and Sunday afternoon at Allstate Arena. For tickets to visit ChicagoWolves.com, we are winners. We are the Wolves. And this hour is being brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago. Tony, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on the Lawrence Holmes Show.
Thanks, but I'd rather have Rendon.
Well, yeah.
Yes, sir. Come on, man. Don't be that guy.
God. Yes, obviously. You'd rather have the best free agent on the market. Yes. Congratulations. You know who Anthony Rendon is. Now.
You and every other baseball fan in the world.
Obviously. God, I hate people sometimes. We couldn't even have one segment, one short ass segment.
Who would be a trade target for them?
Francisco Lindor.
They should go for Mike Trout.
Oh, you're right. You know why? I don't know if you know this. Mike Trout's the best player in baseball. We can't have nothing. Not nothing. Here I am. All I wanted to do was spend 5 minutes talking about the possibility of Castellanos being a White Sox.
I'd rather have Rendon.
Well, yeah.
Make me a bicycle, clown.
I think that you should hang out with us for the next 2 hours. We have a lot of stuff that we need to discuss on a lot of different fronts. And there is one story that we've been dying to talk about since Monday. And maybe we'll get to it in today's show. My name is Lawrence Holmes. My crew, Tony Gill, a.k.a. Tone, a.k.a. Tony Two Bags, a.k.a. Tony has done it again. Yeah, that's your man's. That's your man's over there. And White Chocolate himself, Rick Camp. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. Visit your local Hyundai dealer and test drive the Hyundai Palisade today. We are going to talk about the Bulls game last night in the micro and then the macro of the Bulls overall as an organization and where things stand, because this is not what it should look like after 8 games. And I know that, I mean, it's a 10th of your season, but I know that they will continue to say that it's early. I felt this way last year when Jim Boylan took over the job, that he was overmatched in doing his job. And I also wanted to make sure that I was being fair to Jim Boylan as he tries to build one of those buzzwords, culture, around the Bulls. So fine. Whether it's Tony or Campy or people I know who cover this team on a day-to-day basis, people saying to me, you know, Jim's a good guy. That's great. I appreciate that he might be a good guy. What I fail to see yet is him being a good coach. And yesterday was another example of that. He is overmatched in his job. And I'm not talking about even just handling of the personalities, where I think it was his biggest struggle, and he worked through that a little bit as the season went on. I think from an X's and O's standpoint, he is lacking. And don't throw his resume at me to say that he's not, because there's more evidence in his record as being the Bulls coach of 19-47 that he is. And you saw it on display last night. You saw a winnable game just get salted away and no actual adjustments happening while the game is going on. The simplest adjustment that any coach in any sport has when there is a momentum shift and things aren't going your way. It is the simplest thing that a coach can do is call a timeout and make a substitution.
A guy who is known since he's been a head coach to use all of his timeouts had four and didn't use one.
Here are the reasons why you can use the timeout, Tony. There's a few of them. One, the players that you have on the floor are exhausted, okay? Two, there's something that's happening schematically that you can adjust when they come to the sideline. You pull out the dry erase board and say, okay, this is what they're doing to us. This is how we're going to stop it. Or three, that schematic change that I'm going to make isn't going to matter unless I make some adjustments with who's actually in the game. Those three reasons are reasons why when a team goes on a run like that, at some point you have to call a timeout. He is overmatched. And I'm not here to tell you that because Jim Boylan is not necessarily eloquent when he speaks to the media, although some of the stuff that he says borders on the bizarre, that's why I think he's overmatched. But it does show me that there isn't depth in his reflection on what just occurred. And maybe he's one of these guys that needs to go and look at the film and then go, perhaps we should have done it this way. But basketball is not as complicated with football. There aren't 22 guys that you have to go and say, this guy have his assignment versus this guy. You kind of know. You kind of know what went wrong in the moment, especially if you're a coach at that level of it. You saw them give another lead away. 19 points. They had a 19-point lead in this game. And yes, it's the NBA and it is the league of runs. But on a night, it wasn't like you got the onslaught from LeBron James. Granted, he had 30, 10, and 11 last night. But it wasn't like LeBron was just dog walking you up and down the floor. That's not what happened. Anthony Davis wasn't dog walking you up the floor. The Lakers' second unit dog walked the Bulls at the end of the third and into the fourth quarter. Everyone, and I should have tweeted it out when it happened, but I'm sure that everyone looked at the end of the third quarter and was like, ooh, this lead doesn't feel safe. Basketball's weird. You can kind of feel it sometimes. And that lead never felt safe. And then you saw it play out.
Oh, yeah. The Lakers figured out what the Bulls were doing defensively. Frank Vogel said that in his postgame. We knew how they played defense. They like to be aggressive on the screen rolls. They like to have Wendell Carter blitz those screens, whoever the big blitz those screens. And as soon as they figured it out, at the end of the third quarter, the bench of the Lakers, Kyle Kuzma, who's still trying to work himself back, He scored two baskets in a row. That should have been a timeout.
Kyle Kuzma was out here going to the basket on the Bulls.
We have to change something defensively, because now what we've been able to get away with for 36 minutes is not working now. Let's do something else defensively. Call the timeout. He let it play out. No change, no signal to the players on court. Hey, don't blitz anymore. Don't come up anymore.
Switch.
No, same defensive strategy, no adjustment, and the Lakers ran away with it.
And we have now, for the last three Bulls games, and at some point I'm just not going to care anymore, and I'm not even going to bring it up. I'm still in that phase where the season is young enough and there's enough time left that I still care, and I'm still getting mad, but I'm quickly going to not care about the Bulls, because for three games we've been talking about them blitzing screen roll and the other things that they could do. And you can go back and watch it yourself. Watch at the end of the game. Watch Zach LaVine play screen roll. And watch how he just ends up in no man's land. And then the guy's gone. Not guarding anyone. Not doing anything. And that's even before we get to how teams are like, oh, you're going to blitz screen roll? Cool. We're going to rotate the ball. And watch you not rotate back on defense. We've been watching this for three games. The three of us have pointed this out this entire week. You mean to tell me the NBA coaches can't look at that and go, I know exactly how I want to attack the Bulls now?
And it's frustrating for the opposing coach when their team doesn't do it. It's because everybody knows what the Bulls are doing defensively.
That's why you're giving up 113 points a game. That's why. Because you don't, whether it is effort or scheme, both things can be true. Jim Boylan can be right when he says guys have got to be tougher. I agree with him. Guys do have to be tougher. You've got to be smarter. You've got to be better. And what coaches love to do, and he was another example of it yesterday, the idea of, well, I'm accountable. You saying you're accountable doesn't mean that you're accountable. It's just something that you say and throw away. If you were accountable, you would at least go, you know what? When Cody asked you why last night in the post game, why you didn't call a timeout, a person who's accountable will go, I'm going to look back at the game and figure out if that's something that I should have done. Instead of digging in, coaches love to do this nonsense. They keep digging in and saying, oh, no, I would do it 1,000 times out of 1,000. Get out of here with that nonsense. If I present you with a better way and you still choose to take the worst way, you're a bad coach. Your stubbornness is not a positive to me. It just means that you would prefer that you only do it your way without any sort of input or reflection on what it is you do for a living.
When things are going downhill that quickly, the players are looking to their leader, their coach, to do something. And he just stood by. He stood by as his children were drowning. He's like, you better learn how to swim.
Yep. That's what it is. I'm trying to get our bench up to speed. I want to develop a bench.
What?
That makes no sense. That's a coach who's in over his head and is saying ridiculous stuff. And you don't have to take it.
And even after all of that goes down, they're not out of the game yet. They come out of the actual timeout that they take. Two straight possessions offensively. It's two-man game with LaVine and Carter. They get two baskets fairly easily. And then they don't go back to it for at least a handful of possessions, maybe more. And that's where the game goes 100% off the rails, from big lead to small deficit to you have scrubs in at the end of a game when you were up by 18 with 4 minutes left in the third.
Campy, you called it out as it was happening last night. I was seeing you on Twitter saying, why wouldn't they go back to that offensive set? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. What's supposed to be the joy of your multi-ball handler system is, yes, whoever gets the ball off the backboard when it's actually not a made basket can bring the ball up, but it's also you can ride whatever hot hand because your offense isn't dependent on the same guy every time initiating it. That's an example of saying, you know what? This is working at the moment when the backups were in, and even when LeBron and AD came back in, it was still working a little bit. They could have gone to it for, if nothing else, just to stabilize themselves a little bit. Go to something, what we worry about with the Bears offense. What do you know you can do well? That's one of those things the Bulls can do pretty well more often than not.